Papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis from some veteran local journalists talking about what's going on in the news media these days, and there's always a lot of it. I'm Rex Smith of the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union. Here in the studio with me today are David and Barbara. That is David Gustina, the WAMC morning host and producer, and Barbara Lombardo, formerly editor of the Saratogian, executive editor of the Record of Troy as well.
Hello, all.
He's back, Barbara. He's back. Give him a pause. He's been gone for so long.
I missed 2 weeks in a row of the show for the first time, in like 30 years.
It's really not something
don't
we can allow
again. Don't let that happen again.
Yeah, your vacation time has been rescinded, sir.
Well, it was a wonderful trip. I must say, I went to Scotland, and I couldn't understand half of what was being said to me. They speak a manner of English over there.
Indeed, and you were wearing quite the Scottish garb when
you came. Got a little Harris Tweed here. Thank you very much. Wool from the Shetland Islands. So, very cool. What's on your mind? Tell me what we're going to talk about today. David, what do you have in
mind? I want to talk about repetition.
I got that. I saw what you did there.
He's the head of the redundancy department.
I see. Okay.
The department of redundancy department.
Repetition is a journalistic tack.
Indeed.
Okay.
Especially in broadcast journalism.
Okay. Remind me of that if I don't remember to repeat it.
I'd also like to talk about, I'll try to say this only once, so you won't have to edit it, David. I'd like to talk about the safety of journalists and the situation of journalists who are covering protests and coming closer to home, something that applies all over the place but happened in the Capital District. What happens when somebody wants to confess to a crime to the media?
Yeah, exactly. A remarkable instance of that recently here in the Capital Region. You know, the fact is those of us who are in the studio today have spent our careers in local journalism, most of it during a time a lot less tense for doing our jobs than what faces people these days. But that is the rise of Donald Trump and the spread of his mindset about real journalism has made reporting dangerous work here in America and around the world. And I think that's what you're referring to, Barbara. A couple of days ago, masked federal agents manhandled reporters inside the federal courthouse in Manhattan. They shoved reporters to the ground as the reporters tried to shoot a video of an apparent ICE arrest. And they forced one reporter, who was apparently unconscious for a while, to be transported to a hospital by an ambulance for treatment. That's nice work by ICE. And then this week, two journalists were scheduled to go on trial in Kentucky for simply covering a protest that was taking place on the bridge between Covington, Kentucky and Cincinnati, Ohio. Simply videotaping, they got arrested for that. So the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker is a thing, and it has counted 386 cases. 386 cases of journalists being arrested while doing their jobs in America since 2017. 80% of them were arrested while the reporters were covering protests. And we've talked about this on this program before, but let's be clear. This is part and parcel of Donald Trump's attack on freedom of expression in America. Since 2015, Trump has posted on social media more than 3,500 direct attacks on the press, some targeting individual journalists, some news outlets, some just the media. And because of America's influence globally, I'd say that mindset makes it easier for other nations to similarly attack journalists with impunity, most notably Benjamin Netanyahu's government of Israel, which has killed 248 journalists in Gaza, according to the UN, many of them intentionally targeted to silence their voices, to stop that reporting. That's the truth. And truth-telling is the role of journalism, of course. It's more than tragic that our government sees that task as a threat. And it's why we here urge all of you who are listening to stand up for real reporting that matters with your backing for local journalists, including, we certainly hope, supporting the work of this public radio station. Please, thank you very much. and by supporting those public officials who don't seek to extend their own power by shutting down the truth-telling power of journalism. The very fact that you're listening today suggests that you folks are with us on this topic, and so we thank you. So that's all. I just had to get that off my chest as I come back from vacation and think about all that's been going on. We need to stand up for truth-telling.
And we have to think of this not just as a national story with international implications as well, but as a local story. This happens in all of our communities. So when there is a protest in our own communities, our towns and cities, what are we expecting the local police to do to maintain decorum? And who's going to define what decorum is? I'd want to hear from the people running for office in charge of our local police departments and what their position is. And it's really a tricky situation because they can say, oh, we're supportive of the First Amendment. We're going to allow protests. But then when you're cracking down on the media.
Yeah. And if we ask the question, we look like we're being self-serving, and yet we should know what law enforcement thinks, your DAs, your prosecutors think about the press's role when it comes to reporting on police activity. I mean, you can see right here in the story about Kentucky, Kenton County Prosecutor Rob Sanders told the local station WLWT that he viewed the defendant's status as reporters as irrelevant. And they come up with these misdemeanors and these other charges when in most cases, those reporters have IDs or clearly labeled the press, they're holding a camera, you can tell. And I understand there are bloggers and all sorts of other folks, but your mainstream press knows that they need to be identifiable when they're at a protest. And the idea that a prosecutor clearly doesn't understand the role the press plays in something like that is dangerous.
They understand, they just don't care. In fact, they would rather quash it. It's important that people understand that the press is not asking for special consideration, but I guess we are kind of asking for special consideration. We wouldn't expect just anybody and their brother to be able to get up close to something and interfere and take pictures, whatever, or why not? If you have a right to be out at a protest, anybody can do it, even if you're not representing the press. So we want to have the same rights that anyone should have.
I think you're right. Don't we in some ways deserve special consideration since we have special consideration in the Bill of Rights?
There is actually, there was until the Trump administration, a policy at the U.S. Justice Department of actually giving special consideration to the rights of the press, of saying, no, we're not going to demand to know who all the sources are of some of these. We're not going to exercise subpoenas on reporters. We're not going to accuse them of crimes for getting information that's classified. That is no longer the case with the Trump Justice Department, and politicians locally are finding that there's value in taking on the media because Donald Trump has made that part of the watchword of how campaigns are run. So yes, this does. You're right, Barbara. This has local implications because local politicians are, it's, yeah, you know, we've always had politicians saying, well, you can't trust the press.
Sure.
And, you know, that kind of adversity, we're accustomed to that. Sure. And that's fine. But this impunity of attacking the exercise of free speech and the pursuit of information is a phenomenon that is very destructive.
Yeah, I mean, this destruction of what media is and what it's supposed to do by labeling it fake is very dangerous. And now in an era when there's truly fake news, you have a recipe for disaster. We can't have a society based on a disagreement on what some of the basic precepts of our society are. And when you've lost faith in institutions, including the media, you've got a real problem in a democracy.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you're seeing only what the government wants you to see, and they don't want to see things that are going to make them look bad. And in the case in Cincinnati, it was horrifying. The officer puts a media person in handcuffs, and they're charged with felony rioting. It was absurdly horrible. And, of course, that gets pled down.
Yeah,
and
but even, they're still on trial for a misdemeanor that could put them behind bars for 3 months.
Right, and it's really worrisome to see how is that going to play out for everybody else. And you want to hear the elected officials speak up about this.
We need to know what they think. So listen, you guys apparently had some really interesting times while I was gone because there's all this mail that's come in from listeners. First off, people are upset with you, David, for the fact that there are a couple of sports breaks that you're not doing in the morning anymore, right? In your morning program after the 6 o'clock and after the 7 o'clock. You used to do some scores, and people are unhappy that you don't do those.
6:19 and 7:19. We've been through this now a few times. The pledges, the calls, the letters are coming in, Rex. So many who even aren't avid sports fans, so they're used to that routine, that repeated sports report at 6:19 and 7:19 every morning. That's part of their routine. Others say, you know, it's news. It's news for me. I want to know what my team's doing. Others say that they've switched to other stations at 6:19 and 7:19 because of the sports report. And others still say it's not news at all. I'd rather hear more hard news than, you know, your sports scores. You can get them anywhere else.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I have to, not having a player in this game, what is that expression?
A dog in the race.
A dog in the race. Well, people don't even race dogs
anymore.
Queen
of cliches.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I don't have a horse in this race then. Anyway.
A horse in the race. That's what I should say for Saratoga.
I think that, David, what is unique about WAMC is what you bring from your staff here. What is great is the reporting that comes from NPR at that hour of the day. You're bringing people content they can't get elsewhere. So I think you're exactly right to have sports scores that can easily be found just by Googling on your phone. Taking time away from what you would otherwise be doing is a mistake.
Well, we addressed this while you were out gallivanting in the hills.
Yes.
On that point of it. And the last I heard was that you were still considering it because the people who were complaining were not Googlers.
Well.
But they were loyal supporters of WAMC, so.
Well, the other thing is this question about the theme song of our program. Here's a guy, Don's. I love the show. However, Pete Seeger's recording of Newspapermen has to be retired. Recorded that song 8 decades ago. The sound of the lyrics are dated.
Harumph.
Harumph. Here's one who said, I just heard that a listener called Pete Seeger's famous and fabulous theme song dated. Absolutely not. Devoted his life and much of his career to enlighten people.
Hooray!
Hooray! This person likes it. He's very grateful to have this music on Sunday evening. I think the best thing about the program is the Seeger song, Hey.
No, even better, Rex. It is. It really is. Because the Seeger song goes back to 1934. That's Vern Partlow, who was a copy editor who wrote those lyrics.
Cool.
And then Pete, as he was so well known for, wrote the music to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you get, oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Follow the lyrics of that song, and you will see nothing has really changed. In journalism, the same basic issues confront us right now, including you publishers going to big shots for their dough.
Well, are you still mulling the decision about sports, or has a decision been made, or are we ready to share anything like that now?
I am not ready to make an official announcement. The letters are still coming in, by the way. Media at WAMC.org. We'll have an update at some point.
Oh, cool.
Sorry I had to repeat myself.
Anyway, Diane says, thank you all at WAMC for your dedication to the reality of our lives in the modern world. But very much appreciates hearing Pete's iconic song at 6 p.m. every Sunday. Puts it all in perspective. We have been fighting for a better world for decades, and yes, we still care. By the way, the reason that the media executives go to rich people for money is because that's where the money is.
I'm shocked these things are happening.
For-profit media, like the Times Union, where I was the editor for 18 years, or the nonprofit media, like WAMC, which really depends upon underwriting and contributions, people, please remember the fund drive coming up. We all have to turn for money to somewhere to support the journalism, and that's why at the outset here I was saying to people, please let your contributions come to these places that make a difference here.
But you have to say, Rex, don't you? And I agree with you that, you know, the larger you are as a media organization, in some sense, you have the money to file the lawsuit, to defend yourself. But they haven't been. When it's come to this and a president who is doing this, they haven't been able to stand up to him.
Yeah.
Because the corporation holds that lawsuit as to whether they're going to file it or not. And the corporation will not do anything that they perceive hurts the bottom line, even with the Kimmel situation, when in the end you could argue that it did.
Eventually, the consumers triumphed over Sinclair and Nexstar, and Kimmel was returned to the airwaves. And not every corporation has caved.
Yet.
Oh, come on. You're giving them too much credit. This was not because they wanted to do the right things. It is like all the other decisions about money. They realized it was more of a financial preference for them to bring Kimmel back than to lose him and risk other repercussions.
Which is really actually great, because that means that this is a service to the public, because the public pressure on the corporations whether it was correct. It had its impact.
It would I definitely think it had its impact, because if everyone was quiet, nothing else would have come of it. But
will they get a little
loud
about other things, though? That's the issue. Will we be standing up in other areas? You can stand up about an entertainment program. And yes, I was angry. I think satire and humor and joking about a president is necessary in a democratic society. But are they going to stand up about health care? Are they going to stand up about Social Security? Are they going to stand up about the environment?
Well, we will see, for example, what happens at CBS News, where apparently a quasi-conservative opinion columnist, Ari Weiss,
yes,
is going to become the editor-in-chief. And we will see if that has any impact on the reporting of CBS, which has been, in some instances, literally heroic over the years. We'll see if there's a change there. Okay, you were going to say something about repetition, about saying the same thing over again and over again and over again.
I see what you did there, Rex. Touche on the return on that one. And that's right, repetition. You know, one of the things we've talked about, why the Trump administration has been so effective, is that he gives people nicknames, he comes up with phrases, and he repeats them over and over and over again, including fake news, which just became part of the lexicon after he started repeating it over and over again. But that's a principle, not only in politicking or in advertising, but in broadcasting. That's right. Those of you that have written about, for example, the sports report and saying, well, if you take it away, I'm just going to hear the same story again. I hear these stories repeated all the time. Well, Morning Edition from National Public Radio is only a 2-hour program, but it airs from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. Why? Because at 7 a.m. they repeat it.
Aha.
So you hear the same 2 hours again. That's why you hear the same stories a couple of times, because many of our listeners listen through the 4 hours or just have it on in the house. Well, the principle is that most people only listen to the radio for an average of maybe 6 to 10 minutes at most. So in order for people to know what's happening, you need to repeat the major stories of the day. Do sometimes they get over-repeated? I'll give you that. But that largely has a function to do with the amount of staff you have, the amount of content you're able to produce. Beyond that, it's part of the function of broadcasting. We repeat stories on the national level, on the regional level, and on the local level.
Yeah, I think that's important. That's a really interesting principle for you to articulate. And, you know, one of the things in newspapering that we would often talk about is the A matter, the stuff that you have that is the background of a story. Sometimes stories require so much A matter, so much stuff that backs up what is the new development, that you'll have a little new development that is perhaps 3 or 4 paragraphs, and you'll have a 12-paragraph story that repeats what a lot of people already know, but not everybody does. So that is actually a principle of reporting also, that repetition is sometimes necessary just to have context for something.
Yeah, one of the challenges I would say for broadcast would be compared to in the news days, when you had the challenge of making sure you had enough news to fill your newspaper, meaning the pages all had stuff on them. Every page had something on it. That took some planning, especially if you had a big news hole and a small staff. Now with broadcast, you're concerned with how are you going to fill the airwaves 24/7. You guys are always on. And that is going to necessitate, from a staffing perspective, that some news gets repeated. So I was glad that you did give us, you know, kind of conceded that with staffing, you're going to repeat some news. And so you don't really expect everyone to be listening 24/7. So when I hear the same news report, and not just this station, but this station and others, you hear the same news reported about a town that I didn't give a hoot about the first time, and I'm going to hear it 2 hours later.
Sure.
And 2 hours later. But then I'll hear something else. But that's part of what we have to cope with.
By the way, writing for broadcast is so different from writing for print.
Said Rex Smith.
Yes, absolutely. I teach a course for my wife's online writing clinic in writing opinion for print, audio, and digital. And one of the things that is important to note when you're writing for audio is that the words go by quickly. And if you put a parenthetical clause in the middle, people won't know what you're saying at the beginning or the end of the sentence. If you write purple prose, if you give people language that you think is just beautiful, they'll be listening to that and they'll miss the point that you're trying to make. So broadcast writing requires simplicity and clarity, and usually just direct, shorter sentences.
Yeah, no compound sentences, sir.
Please.
That's right. And you know what? You have to reach your audience through their ears, not through their eyes. When you're reading, you can handle all that complex compound sentence, but you can't do that in broadcasting. You have to be clear and concise and use oral, A-U-R-A-L, style.
Mm-hmm. So what you can hear.
Cool.
Even good print writers are cognizant of the need to make sure that what they are writing sounds correct to the ear.
By the way, folks, if you have thoughts on this, media@wamc.org is how you could reach us. I'm Rex Smith here with David Gustina and Barbara Lombardo for the Media Project. We were going to talk about this amazing confession. Just to return, again, the A matter, Lorenz Krauss was accused of murdering his parents and burying them behind their Albany home in their backyard 8 years ago.
Rex, kind of like Mrs. Sadie Smuggery did to her.
Folks, that's in the Pete Seeger song, if you haven't heard it.
Okay, sorry.
That's a later verse. Yes, yes, yes. Be sure you listen for that one. Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. He did, allegedly. And police discovered the human remains. They decided that the son, Lorenz Krauss, was the key suspect. And Lorenz Krauss wrote a letter to a number of media, apparently saying, yeah, I did it. And then went on to an interview at WRGB, Channel 6, CBS 6 in Albany.
Greg Floyd.
Sat there with Greg Floyd, the anchor, and literally confessed on camera. This has some interesting implications, right? Well, among them, how do you actually handle an interview like that? I don't know of anything like this.
Nor I. Over the years, we would get letters from people that were pretty unhinged and things that I would say, few I think I still have, where you'd actually alert the police that this is weird, we want this to be on your radar.
That's
but
right.
Nothing where somebody has actually said they killed somebody and they'd like to talk to you about it.
We've had it the other way because of public broadcasting being free over the air. A lot of prisoners and some of the upstate prisons would send us letters.
Oh, yeah.
Us too.
Saying, you know, hey, you know, I didn't do this. You got to help me. Here's some information on my case. Can you help me out? So we would get that. But this is a whole nother level.
Didn't you occasionally get those and wonder, there could be somebody in there that was a real
genuinely innocent. Yeah, we would get so many of them that you couldn't handle all of the letters from prisoners. But sometimes you think, gosh, I don't know. Should I pay more attention to this?
Yeah.
It's really tough.
But as for this one, if you had gotten this letter that the guy wanted to call to sit down and talk to somebody, I'd want them to talk to me.
Absolutely. And somehow, while other reporters did try to reach out to him, he ended up going to the CBS 6 studios. The Times Union reporter apparently got him on the phone as he was driving to the studio, and he sat there on camera, and then as he was leaving, he was arrested in the parking lot of the police. Which raises an interesting
question. We've got some questions, don't we? Right. So
First
he confesses over the television station. Now, Rex, they recorded the interview and aired it later.
Very quickly.
Not much later.
Not much later.
Yeah, about 20 minutes later.
About 20 minutes later. But then suddenly the police are in the parking lot. We don't know how the police were tipped off that he was at the studio. Maybe he called them. Who knows? We don't know, but that is a big question.
Yes.
If the reporter tipped them off, then we have to talk about the ethics of the press working with police.
And how about the safety of your staff? Okay, this is a guy that I guess they deemed was not going to be pulling out a gun or a knife and jumping on somebody.
Well, the news director explained that he did set up a studio in the lobby so that he couldn't get further into the building.
So he could just jump on the people who were right there.
Yeah,
and there was a plainclothes officer in the premises.
Which is interesting, which is the real question beyond the ethics question, or in addition to the ethics question that you raised, David, is about the admissibility of this confession and trial. Because if the police actually were involved in eliciting this inculpatory statement, then that raises the question of whether it can be admitted at trial because his rights attached. If you make an inculpatory statement, even if police are not present, but they have sort of hatched this, then you may fall into the Miranda issue.
And we should tell people that this all allegedly has to do with also Social Security. The way they found out about this was the Social Security Administration sent a letter, and the parents, of course, now the bodies removed from the premises, were getting these Social Security checks.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing. There is a legal term known as excited utterance. If somebody at the point of being arrested says, oh my God, I did it, you got me. That's probably okay for admission if that really happened. But if there was a thoughtful effort by the police to induce an inculpatory statement without Mirandizing the suspect, then that's a really interesting topic.
We don't encourage copycats, please.
Please.
This is a terrible thing.
In terms of the homicide, yes.
Yeah, and using the press to say, I want to get my word out through the press.
Yes, don't repeat it.
All right. Interesting topics all. And we've run out of time for this fascinating
now
media project.
Now it's time for the best part of the show.
All right. Barbara Lombardo, David Gustina, our producer, and I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week. And as David said, stay tuned for Pete.
All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the film. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. Funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.